Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us as we take a look at sports on the program today, as we often do, in fact, pretty much always do on the first Tuesday of the month. And you know, for as long as, I guess, people have played sports, there have been other people who have watched. And on the show today, we're going to take a closer look at sports fans. There's been some new research done to suggest being a sports fan may make you happier and healthier. Do you believe it? Our guest, Larry Olmsted, does. He's an award-winning journalist. His latest book is Fans: How Watching Sports Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Understanding. So, has being a fan made you happier? If you're not a sports fan, what would you like to know about the research? What gripes do you have about sports fans? Love to hear from you. Join in at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Larry Olmsted, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Well, I really enjoyed your book. You said that you are a passionate fan of sports fans. Why are fans so interesting to you?
Well, you know, spectator sports is obviously a very big deal and big business all around the world. You know, in the U.S., about nearly 200 million Americans identify themselves in Gallup poll as being sports fans, which is, you know, more people than voted in our record turnout election for both parties combined. So it's a pretty big thing. Yet when people look at spectator sports, whether it's books or TV coverage or radio or any kind of media, it's almost exclusively on the athletes and teams, while 99.9% of the people participating are fans. So I feel like it's an underserved topic.
I guess I would agree with you on that. And sports, you know, you look at television, for example, and watching television, sports on television, it is huge. I mean, I think in your book you said like 89 out of the top 100 shows on TV were sports shows?
Yeah, and I mean, the Super Bowl, which just passed, is always the number one show of the year on TV, regardless really what else happens in society. so, you know, the audience is huge. I mean, I remember when ESPN launched and people were like, oh, who's going to watch sports, you know, 24 hours a day? And now there's so many other sports channels. But, you know, and the majority, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we think of these packed stadiums, and certainly, you know, you've got Lambeau Field up there. You've got some of the great ones. But the majority of people do watch, you know, consume their sports on TV, not in person. So I think that's important.
And it's what is it about sports? The fact that it's live, there aren't a lot of live programs.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really big part of it. I mean, two things about it. One, you know, it affects the ratings because people essentially have to watch it live. As I say, nobody waits till the end of the season and then binge watches 17 weeks of the NFL. You know, once you kind of know what happens, it's ruined for you. And that's because, not just because it's live, but because of the inherent unpredictability. You know, I compare it to a movie. You go in, you know, I like Star Wars, but for, you know, 9 movies, I've known that at the end of the day, the dark side is not going to win. Or you go to see James Bond. James Bond is not going to let the villain blow up the world. Most of our entertainment has a predictable outcome. Sports, anything can happen. Often does. We love Cinderella stories. I mean, even again, the Super Bowl just passed. Kansas City Chiefs were widely picked to win the game and never were even in contention. And that's, you know, what makes sports so interesting.
So what does science say about fans? Let's talk about our brains when we watch sports.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest surprises to me was one of the psychologists described to me as a circuit breaker in our brains. Because if you think about it, in every major sport, only one team wins the championship, right? And, you know, the NFL, only one team can win the Super Bowl. So the majority of fans, you would think, would be despondent because they're being disappointed every year. But it turns out that that's not really the case, because the wins count more than the losses. And if you, you know, when your team does, when you're the Chicago Cubs and you finally win the World Series after all that time, the upside potential, the emotion you feel is basically limitless. But when the team loses, you have a capacity to subconsciously shut that off, even if they lose the Super Bowl and it's a big disappointment. So, you know, I grew up in Queens near Shea Stadium, and I remember, you know, the Mets winning the World Series in 1986, but I don't remember all the details of them losing every year since. So, you know, we're sort of designed to enjoy the good times more, so that if your team, and most teams in most sports over time are pretty average, but if your team is 50-50 for years, you get more emotional satisfaction from the ups than the downs, and you still come out ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking with Larry Olmsted today. His book is titled Fans, How Watching Sports Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Understanding. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Gary in Wayne, let's go to you. Hi, Gary. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Larry. I always love your show. I had two quick stories. The first is, I was born in 51. And grew up in a small town of Edgar, which sits down in the valley. And my dad and my older brother and I would sit on the front porch in summer and listen to the Milwaukee Braves. And because it being that point in the 50s, there wasn't ESPN, there wasn't FM radio carrying sports, and AM stations had to drop their signal strength at sundown. So we'd be sitting on the front porch, and we would hear Earl Gillespie say, Aaron up the bat, he's settling in, Matthew's on deck, and the windup and the pitch, and then we'd get static because they had to drop their signal strength. And we would never shut the radio off right away because we always hoped, well, maybe this would be the night that we find out different. And, of course, it never changed. And we had to wait until the 10 o'clock sports came on the local news station to find out how the game ended.
Oh, Gary, well, that's a good story. Well, what do you make of that? And I know there are things in your book that apply to what Gary's talking about in many ways.
That is a great story, Gary, and I've not heard that about the signal dropping off at night, but certainly, you know, the image of people, you know, listening to baseball, you know, when it was in its primacy, you know, when it was the number one sport on the radio, is, you know, an iconic part of Americana. But I think, you know, what's really relevant that Gary mentioned is the multi-generational approach. I mean, even today, so many sports fans and non-sports fans that I talk to, who their first recollection of their experience with sports is with their parents or their grandparents or their children, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, why it's so important in our society is because it connects people of all ages, all races, all educations, all incomes, all professions, but especially all generations.
Gary, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. Again, you can join us, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Mary in Shawano has a different take. She doesn't think sports always makes people happy. There's a team you want to lose, an enemy, so to speak. Mary said she's seen how sports teams' losses can make people sad and angry. You address that in your book, too.
I do, and she's absolutely right, but there's, you know, a couple of pieces of good news here. One is, just as I was saying, you know, earlier, that, you know, the losses, you know, bring us more, I mean, the wins bring us more happiness than the losses. They're also longer lived. You know, you tend to forget the losses once they start to slip into the past, that time heals all wounds. But as far as hating the other opponents or the other, you know, the fans or other teams, I mean, you know, part of that is the nature of sports rivalry, geographic. Every team has sort of its classic opponent. But that did bother me as I was researching the book, this sort of tribalistic nature. You know, I live in New England, and there's a lot of Red Sox fans, and they're quick to tell you how much they hate the Yankees and Yankees fans. And I think, like, well, you don't even know these people. You know, you shouldn't hate them. And one of the good things that's come around is the advent of fantasy sports, you know, which is a fairly recent phenomenon, but it's grown super fast. U.S. and Canada, somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 million people participate regularly in fantasy sports. And fantasy sports is breaking down that long-held tribalism, the us versus them, because you, to succeed, you have to have players from the teams maybe you didn't like on your team, and that makes you suddenly sympathetic to them. And I talk to a lot of regular fantasy players. I talk to a guy who plays several football leagues and is a Redskins fan and for years couldn't draft anyone from the Dallas Cowboys, but then finally he decided he wanted to win, he had to, and it sort of changed his outlook on sports.
That's really interesting. I have. There's a feeling, at least among friends or people that I know, is kind of different. The Badgers, Wisconsin Badgers football team, and the University of Minnesota football, or certainly hockey. I mean, we're kind of mortal enemies in a way. But then, when you look at professional baseball, people look much more kindly on the Minnesota from here on the Minnesota Twins. So the same person that might hate the Minnesota College and its sports doesn't mind at all the Minnesota Twins. Have you ever come across that?
Well, I do think that college fandom can be a little bit more intense, because typically you have more rolled up in it. You know, you went to that school or you grew up in that area. I mean, most sports fandom is geographically based, in the sense that, you know, it's contingent on where you're born. You know, much like religion, people don't really choose to be fans of a team as much as they're born into it. But, you know, college is a little bit different, and certainly, you know, in college football, there's no fans as intense, I think, as college football fans, especially when you look at, you know, schools like Alabama. And you know, I was fascinated when I researched my book to find out that, you know, when the NCAA licenses all of these sweatshirts and hats and everything with little hologram logos, but I didn't know that they licensed coffins for college football, and people are, you know, passionate enough to want to buy that NCAA logo coffin and be buried in it.
Well, and you know, hats and jerseys, when you see someone, I can remember I had my daughter at Disney World in Florida, and, you know, we're just walking on, I've got a UW Badgers T-shirt on, and a guy walks by, and he's got a UW Badgers hat. Well, I didn't know him from Adam, but we do kind of fist bumps. Because here's somebody you don't know at all, but he is part of my community of fans for the Badger team.
Absolutely, and you're hitting on probably one of the most important points in my book. You know, the psychologists I've talked to, they have identified, you know, the first thing in the title is how watching sports makes us happier. And these psychologists have identified 24 different mental health benefits that sports fans enjoy more than non-fans. And there are things like lower rates of depression and higher self-esteem and better social connections. But basically, the majority of them all come from this sense of community and belonging. And that, in turn, is unique in sports. You know, one of my editors, who is not a sports fan, said, well, you know, how is it any different from, you know, being a Harry Potter fan or a fan of books or a fan of music? And one of the reasons is that constant reinforcement that you get when you see someone in the supermarket or at Disney World, and an NHL executive I talked to called it the head nod. You did a fist bump, but, you know, usually you'd look and just catch eye contact and give a little shake of your head and say, yeah, you know, we're connected even though we're strangers. And the same thing could happen if you happen to be wearing a Harry Potter shirt and saw somebody else with a Harry Potter shirt, but that just doesn't happen nearly as much as it does with sports.
Larry Olmsted, our guest today, as we talk about sports and his book, Fans, How Watching Sports Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Understanding. Lots of callers online. There's still a line open for you at 800-642-1234. Jill Nadeau, Jana Roach Slice, our producers today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking sports on the show today, Larry Mueller here with my guest, Larry Olmsted, author of Fans, How Watching Sports Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Understanding. Marianne, let's go to you in Superior next. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi there. I have a story about tailgating down at a Packer-Bears game. I was an avid Bear fan, and my husband was an avid Packer fan, and so you can imagine we got into quite discussions, but we went down to a game, and I watched something I've never seen before. A truck unloaded a dining room table, silverware, a beautiful crystal and glassware, and then a great big pot, and they had a small camp stove. They boiled the water, they threw in some lobster, and they were getting prepared for a wonderful dinner. And all of this was done tailgating at the Packers field. Since I have become a Packers fan, because nobody tailgates like the Packers.
Larry, comment on that?
Well, again, you know, it's like I was saying how, you know, sports is different from other forms of entertainment and other forms of entertainment fandom. And, you know, with, you know, some very few exceptions like the Grateful Dead, there is not a lot of tailgating involved in, you know, music or other kinds of gatherings besides sports. And tailgating is an integral part of some sports, especially football, both pro and college. And it becomes, you know, part of the experience. Not just, you know, for those who you cook the lobster dinner, but for those who go and are used to seeing, you know, the same, we talk about the sense of community. You might be strangers, but you know that that guy with the chili or that guy making the bratwurst is always over there. And I think it's a key to also, you know, as sports have gotten a lot more expensive to attend and to some degrees difficult to get tickets, it's one of the things that really, you know, sets the live experience apart is that add-on before the game.
Thank you, Marianne. Jim in Newport Township, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Well, good morning. So far, to be honest with you, I think I'm somewhat disappointed to this lighthearted, trivial approach to what I think was a very serious subject. And, you know, I acknowledge that there are spectator sports fans pretty much all around the world. But on the other hand, the concept of the couch potato sports fan, I think, is pretty much exclusively an American phenomenon where the person, you know, has a 9-to-5 job, and sleeps maybe 6-8 hours a night, and then the rest of their time is devoted to watching, being a spectator to either soap operas or spectator sports. You know, in my own particular case, about age 35, you know, up until that point, I had spent a lot of time watching spectator sports, and I said to myself, well, do I want to spend more of my time doing things or sitting around watching other people do things? And this is all intertwined with, I don't think we're either, comparing Americans to the rest of the world, either an emotionally or very physically healthy people.
Jim, I thank you very much for calling. And, you know, there's a lot of research on this that you report on, Larry, in your book. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I want to say that Jim is absolutely right that this is not all lighthearted. There are some very serious topics we haven't discussed yet in my book in ways that sports fandom, you know, affects a lot of other parts of our lives besides, you know, being happy from watching sports. And one of those is physical activities. And I talk about, you know, I mean, first of all, on average, sports fans are more active than non-fans. But part of that is a self-fulfilling prophecy, because you're more likely to be a sports fan in the first place if you already played sports, if you played, you know, high school or little league, you know, you're more likely to be a fan. But part of it is what I call this participation effect, where as a spectator, you are enticed to become more active by watching it. And Jim just described that in a way himself. He would not have chosen to forgo watching sports and become more active had he not been watching sports in the first place. And this is something that we've seen again and again throughout history, with particularly vivid examples like Lance Armstrong. He came around and the number of people, you know, nobody in America cared about the Tour de France. Suddenly they did, and suddenly they started riding bikes in incredible numbers. And all of these charity 50-mile rides and 100-mile rides that still exist today to raise money for cancer or whatever around the country, a lot of that is attributable solely to the spectator interest in Lance Armstrong. And the same thing happens with the Olympics. We watch the Olympics every 2 years now. It used to be every four, but now it's every two. And like clockwork, people see that. They're inspired by the athleticism. They go out. Gym numbers spike. Interest in fitness spikes. And like New Year's resolutions, of course, not everybody sticks with it, but some of them do. And this has been shown, especially when a new sport is debuted at the Olympics. People never really have gotten TV exposure to it before. They're much more eager to try it. So, yes, I think, you know, you shouldn't spend every free minute, you know, sitting on the couch watching sports or any TV or binge watching, you know, Game of Thrones. You should, I personally get out and get a lot of exercise, and everybody should try to be active. And one more thing in that regard that has been a big change, I think, that, you know, really benefits society, we don't think about a lot, is the advent of the DVR. I mean, I personally, you know, I like NFL football, but I'm very active and I won't, you know, stay in at 1 o'clock on a Sunday when it's light out in the winter to watch football. But now I don't have to.
Right. And you stay away from the radio or learning what the score is, and then you go back and watch it. Another example that you talk about in your book that I think was really a good one relating to this is the U.S. women's soccer team. And the Olympics, and the number, the hundreds of thousands of youngsters who were motivated to get into soccer.
Absolutely. I mean, women's soccer boomed in, you know, by hundreds of thousands of participants as a result of that. And you see those examples. Participation in swimming boomed after Michael Phelps. And I tell, you know, my own story where I live in New England. The Boston Marathon is a big deal. It's always on a holiday. You know, it's always on TV. It has a lot of pomp and circumstance. And, you know, a friend of mine watched the marathon and said, you know, we should try running. I had never run. We did start, and I ended up running marathons and 50Ks and half marathons and running regularly for, you know, 20 years, and would not have had that sport not been on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, another sport, speaking of sports that are new, American Ninja Warrior. I'm a fan of American Ninja Warrior, but you write about that a little bit in your book.
I do, because I am a fan of it for a variety of reasons. You know, it combines that sort of the Olympic-esque pure athleticism where you're just like, wow, how can somebody do that, with the sort of amateurism. You know, it's gotten a little more sophisticated as the show has gone on, but for the most part, people are participating because they want to participate. They're not getting paid. You know, it's a very different than other sports on TV. But the real reason, you know, I started, you know, researching it is because we're talking about this participation effect, and there's no better way to study that than with an entirely new sport. So before American Ninja Warrior came along, there was no such thing as ninja gyms and ninja training. And now there's hundreds of ninja gyms across the country, and kids and adults all doing these swinging from ropes and, you know, climbing and doing pull-ups and, you know, all of this stuff that clearly they would not have be doing if the show was not on TV and they had not watched the sport. So to me, it's a very concrete example of how watching sports on TV can translate into more physical activity and better health.
Larry Olmsted, our guest, as we talk about sports fans on the show today. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Dana from Madison emailed to say she'll never heal from the Brewers falling one game short of making the World Series in 2018. That was a heartbreaking loss, and I was at the Brewers-Dodgers game just the game before when the Brewers won, and it looked like they were going to win it all, and I understand that, but I'm kind of getting over it.
It's only been 2 years. You got to give it a little space.
Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Your turn. Thank you for calling. Sarah, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm really interested in what you're saying about that being a sports fan makes people more understanding, because that's just not been my experience, but I have a kind of strange, I used to have a strange mom and grandma who, they were crazy for the Cubs, absolutely crazy. And they would just watch these games, and what they most liked to do was yell at the manager. They both thought they could manage that team much better than whoever was doing it. And it was just, oh, pull him. Oh, you idiot. No, what are you doing that for? It was hysterical. So is that most people aren't like that, I guess, because that's what I see.
No, a lot of people are like that, and that's really why sports radio has thrived, because we love second-guessing managerial decisions. But in this case, when I say that makes us more understanding, I'm talking sort of long-term as a society, and one of the things I look at is the vital role of sports fandom in the civil rights movement, in the women's rights movement, and most recently in the LGBTQ movement. So I'm talking about basically sports fandom transforming us into more open-minded, empathetic, understanding people, not being more understanding of why that guy just struck out.
But at the same time, you write about how watching sports really gives your brain a bit of a workout, like it did to her mother and grandmother.
Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, usually it's hopefully the workout isn't all just from frustration, but it is from no. Understanding. And, you know, some of the concepts, I mean, you look at Moneyball. When I was growing up, you know, I would go to baseball games. My dad taught me to score and, you know, buy pencil in the program. But the only things you really cared about were, you know, wins, losses, ERA, batting average. Now you have all of these crazy statistics and shifts in baseball and other sports. You know, you have complicated defenses, and, you know, to understand and critique what a cover two defense is or why they should be playing zone versus man-to-man, you have to really, you know, be thinking on a fairly strategic level, and you know, any kind of repeated intellectual exercise is good for your brain.
Sarah, thanks again. Linda in Madison, your turn. Hi, Linda.
Yes, I want to know about non-Olympic wrestling that's on TV. Is it a sport? Is it entertainment? Is it both? Is it neither?
Well, it classifies itself as entertainment. You know, there was a big issue with how it was taxed years ago, and so pro wrestling kind of came out officially and said it's entertainment, which means, you know, it's not sport in that, you know, the outcomes are, you know, kind of predetermined. I personally don't find it very entertaining, but a lot of people do. So, I would say not sport, but certainly a lot of people enjoy it.
Rhoda in northern Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I'm so enjoying the show, as I always do, and I just wanted to also speak to the fact that the previous gentleman caller had spoken about that. I'm all for sports and everything, but please, parents and everyone that is not, like, wants to sit in front of the TV all the time, which you guys have just spoken to also, that it's also okay to get out there and get your family out and enjoy things on the Sundays and be part of family, you know, interaction and everything, and don't make the sports the all and the everything, you know, that there is so much more especially for the younger people, well, and the older people too, that you're not a misfit if you don't want to be a road warrior all the time. So that's it, and thank you for speaking to it. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you. Well, comment, Larry.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I don't think it's an either-or situation. I don't think, you know, your choice in life is to, like, you know, sit in front of the TV all day watching sports or to not do that. I think, you know, everything in moderation. And, you know, as I said, watching sports on TV leads a lot more people to participate in outdoor activities and fitness activities, and I think that's good. But I also think it's interesting that, you know, that when I do speak to non-fans, that's the most common thing they say is like, well, how can you, you know, spend so much time on it? But if you had a different hobby, you know, like reading or building model trains or anything, nobody would say that to you.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Well, sports, you sort of got at this a little bit, but sports can really change history. And you look at the influence of Jackie Robinson playing baseball as one of the examples. Talk about that a little.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so many of the barriers and door openings and glass ceilings, you know, have been publicly broken through sport, and that has advanced, as I said, the civil rights movement, the women's rights movement, and just made us more of a tolerant society. And it certainly has not been a cure-all. You know, we still suffer with issues of systemic racism, and there's a lot of problems. But sports has helped to move that needle in many ways. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, when non-sports fans say, oh, you know, what's the big deal? Well, their life is being made better by sports fandom as well, even if they're not participating in the process. And that isn't just, you know, Ken Burns, the documentary filmmaker, said that, you know, you could not have President Obama being elected without Jackie Robinson having played baseball. And not everyone agrees with him, but President Obama agreed with him, which is, you know, fairly significant. Mm-hmm. So, and that's just one part of this fandom playing a role in the world to make the world a better place, which is extends to the peace process and diplomacy and post-traumatic healing after man-made and natural disasters, and a lot of impacts that are, you know, maybe not lighthearted, pretty serious, but improve the lives of people in the world, whether they're sports fans or not.
Yeah, you talked about the Boston Marathon and the things that went on, and 9/11 is another. I think 9/11 might even be a better example of how sports helped.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's actually probably, you know, my favorite chapter in writing the book, because, you know, I went to the 9/11 museum when they had this special exhibition on sports power to heal. I met the curator, and then I went to Las Vegas and interviewed people who had been shot or shot at in that horrific 1 October shooting they had, who, you know, told me about how, you know, sports helped heal them. I found it really moving to me. But, you know, with the 9/11, it was the first time that we stopped sports completely in this country for any prolonged period of time. And then when it came back with that Mets-Braves game in New York, everyone that I spoke to in New York who's a baseball fan or not vividly remembers that day, and Mike Piazza hitting the home run. It's become an iconic part of baseball history. But one fan I spoke to said, you know, that was the moment we could clap and smile again after 9/11. And that's pretty significant, and that's high profile with 9/11 because 9/11 was such a high profile event, but it's happened over and over again. It goes back to ancient Greece, and it happened after Pearl Harbor, and it happened after Hurricane Katrina. It's not just terrorism and war. And it's happening right now with the pandemic. People are finding solace in sports, especially when they can't do anything else and they're kind of locked down. And again, sports was shut down in the pandemic. And when it came back, it made a lot of people happy.
Yeah, I just have reading a comment here from June in Milwaukee. She thinks that during the pandemic, sports have been a real unifier, a way to bring us all together.
I agree. I mean, if you watch the Super Bowl, and most people watch the Super Bowl, they couldn't get you know, enough out of using the words community and coming together and unity, and you know, that's one of the things that sports brings us. And it's fairly, you know, other than your team allegiance, it's pretty nonpartisan way to get together.
Jerry from Prairie du Chien emailed to say he remembers the 50s riding his bike around town on a warm summer evening and being able to hear the Milwaukee Braves broadcast coming out of the open windows of homes and the radio advertising tune for the Miller High Life, the champagne of bottled beers, which you heard about in between every inning.
Yeah, I do remember the champagne of beers, but that reminds me, this is a story that, you know, I actually kind of forgot about and is not in the book. But I happened to be in Italy during one of the years when Italy went to the finals of the World Cup. And I'm not a big soccer fan, but I was in a small town and everybody turned on the game on their TV or radio at maximum volume and opened the windows and went out in the street. And it was like a big outdoor party, and you could just hear the game in the background. But nobody was up there watching it. They were all socializing and outside, and I thought, what a great way to enjoy sports.
Yeah. Dan and DePere, your turn. Hi, Dan.
And I thought, what a great way to enjoy sports.
Turn your radio down, Dan.
Good afternoon. I'd just like to comment on the bonding opportunities that father and son have through sports.
Oh, I think we lost him, but he was talking about the bonding opportunities between him and his dad, and I have a similar with my own dad. Your experience was different.
Well, I did. My father would take me to Mets games at Chase Stadium, and we would sit in those, you know, $4 general admission seats. So in that sense, it was, you know, very similar, and with my brother. But it was later that I realized that my dad wasn't a sports fan at all. I never saw him watch a game on TV or pay any attention other than when we went. And, you know, I realized later that we went, he took us to have a family outing, to have quality time, not because he cared about the baseball, but because he cared about doing something together. And so many people, I mean, almost everyone I've spoken to, and I spoke to hundreds, not thousands of fans, has recollections of their family. And even the non-fans, you know, their recollection of sports has something to do with doing something with their parents or their grandparents. So this is a very, very common theme in sports fandom, is the multi-generational appeal.
Yeah, it definitely is. Well, we haven't covered everything in your book by any means at all. I found it really interesting. And it was great that you were able to back up what you were talking about with some solid research from a number of people. I was trying to remember the name. Dr. Juan, was it? Juan?
Yeah, Dr. Juan is probably at Murray State in Kentucky, one, you know, the leading researcher, sports psychology of fandom. But it's become a bigger topic in the psychology world in recent years. And you know, I expect a lot more research to come out, especially after the pandemic.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. But I tell you what, I really enjoyed your book, Larry. Thank you so much for talking with us today. I really enjoyed our visit. I hope we have a chance to talk again. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Larry Olmsted. Larry's book is titled Fans, How Watching Sports Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Understanding. Lots of good research in there, but a lot of great stories in there as well that I found quite fascinating. Well, I'm also looking forward to talking with our next guest. Megan Hart will be joining us to talk Wisconsin sports, and maybe we'll get elsewhere, but we'll for sure talk baseball, basketball, golf. Aaron Rodgers, I got a couple things on Aaron Rodgers I wanted to mention as well, and I bet she does too. So that's coming up next. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.